This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Verrett. A case filed this month in Milwaukee dealing with the protection of a fetus versus the rights of a mother is getting national attention.
A pregnant woman was taken into custody after telling her doctor that she had been addicted to pain medication the year before her pregnancy.
The Wisconsin law that allowed for her detention exists in four states in the country. The group National Advocates for Pregnant Women is challenging it as unconstitutional in a federal district court in Milwaukee.
Here with us to talk about the case is Eric Eckholm. He wrote an article on the case in today's New York Times. And later in the show, we'll be joined by the executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Good afternoon.
Well, who is Alicia Beltran? Let's start there.
Well, she's a 28-year-old woman, lives in Jackson. She'd worked as a bartender and a waitress, living with her father, had a boyfriend, got pregnant. And when she went for her prenatal care, she thought she was being helpful by telling her doctor about her past, that last year for a few months she had become addicted to an opiate painkiller, but she, working with her parents, interestingly, had kicked the habit, actually had withdrawal and was hospitalized, and since then had on her own been taking a drug that's used in drug treatment programs to help wean people off that dependency or desire. And she had actually phased that out. She'd done it on her own, not under supervision, but she said she had phased it out a few days before this visit. And apparently the physician's assistant who examined her was suspicious or didn't believe her.
Did she volunteer the information about the previous addiction, or was it something that was asked?
I don't know how it came about, but she has always been very open about it. She had seen another doctor before and given the whole story, so it was all in her record.
Now, ultimately, it sounds like a social worker showed up at her door with an action plan, and it didn't go well from there. What happened?
She was first, at the medical examination. She said, "This is crazy. I've already gotten off that drug, and I don't want to put the fetus through that again." And the doctors were quite alarmed by this. And then 2 weeks later, a child welfare social worker shows up at her door unannounced and says, "Look, you need to go into a treatment plan or we're going to get a court order to force you." And she admits she lost her temper. You know, she said, "Look, you know, I've already done this. Go away," and shut the door on the woman. Then 2 days later, the county sheriff showed up and they took her away in handcuffs.
Do you have a sense of how often this may have happened? You know, different circumstances for every case, but how often this may have happened in Wisconsin and these other three states that do this?
Well, I don't know about the other states. In Wisconsin, this was passed in 1998, and there have been most of these are very confidential because it's handled within the child welfare system, which is a confidential, non-criminal, supposedly, approach. But there have been anecdotal stories told by obstetricians or a kid wants to do what's best, and they easily could have. And there are treatments for addiction and for newborns who come from an addicted mother. So there was, in their view, a very exaggerated sense of the danger and a rather unproductive approach, which only scares other women away from telling their doctor the truth.
Do you know what the healthcare facility had to say about it, about why they ended up going this route?
Well, they have refused to talk. You know, there's now a lawsuit, and possibly more will come, and they have confidentiality requirements. A spokesman for the hospital just said, "We are confident that our staff acted on good faith." So it's possible that this physician's assistant and doctor had a genuine, it's probable, you know, they really feared there was something life-endangering to, as they put it, the unborn child. But the facts don't seem to bear that out. But we haven't, you know, we haven't fully heard the other side yet.
Now, you said that there is a pending case on this, which will be heard in federal court in Milwaukee. Do you have a sense of what's at stake here legally?
Well, your next guest can talk about that in more detail since she helped bring the case, but it's an effort to not just throw out this supervision of Ms. Beltran, but to declare the entire law unconstitutional. It's an infringement on liberty, privacy, and various civil rights of a pregnant woman. And if this case seems like a particularly bad, not very thoughtful application of the law, then that only proves the point that it's vague and potentially misused. But this would be probably an important precedent that other states often don't have a specific law, but they try to use their child welfare systems to pressure women into drug treatment. And then a few states, a number of states, have used criminal laws. And in Alabama, when a newborn tests positive for drugs, a number of women have even gone to prison. So this isn't going to resolve the issue for the whole country, but it would be one step toward turning things around, perhaps.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Eric Eckholm with The New York Times. And Lynn Paltrow joins us now. She's the executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. Lynn, thank you for joining us. Hi there, Lynn. Could you tell us how frequently women are detained in Wisconsin for reasons like in the case of Alicia?
As Eric Eckholm pointed out, perhaps one of the many scary things about the law is that they gave the state power over pregnant women through all stages of pregnancy by adding language and amending their children's code. And children's codes are typically extremely confidential. And so that means that you have an incident where you have the state, under this statute, a law enforcement officer can take a pregnant woman into custody just based on his or her belief that she's had too many drinks or even had one drink. It's not a public record. The woman herself is not entitled to counsel at her first proceeding. And so we simply don't know how many cases there are like this. There was one that received a great deal of press involving another woman who went to a Wisconsin hospital saying, "I have developed an addiction to opiates. Please help me." And while one part of the hospital staff was doing exactly that and setting up methadone treatment for her, somebody else in the hospital saw her as unworthy of treatment and needing to be under state control and surveillance, reported her to the state. Sheriffs came, took her to a mental hospital 2 hours away from her husband and her two-year-old, where she languished for 10 days before she was brought in front of a judge, at which point it was clear she had received zero prenatal care and had been given Xanax while she was being held in the mental hospital.
Now, according to Eric's article, Alicia, when she initially appeared in court, wanted to know where her lawyer was and was found that her fetus had a legal guardian. Can you talk a little bit about that, about why she wasn't given legal representation?
I don't know what was in the minds of the people who passed this law. I can only say that it is a statute that really makes very clear that upon becoming pregnant, women in Wisconsin lose their civil rights, that it's really pretty much every right that we associate with constitutional personhood was denied to Alicia Beltran. Her 12-week fetus gets a lawyer. She's not entitled to a lawyer. She can be taken into physical custody for months without necessarily having a hearing and without even clear and convincing evidence that anything she's doing is worthy of being deprived of her liberty. So it's something that people should be very concerned about, that much authority is being delegated to a social worker, a police officer, and even physicians who, as the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse note, most of whom lack the basic education in addiction medicine that's needed to make proper judgments about what kind of services people need.
Now, that was the law we're talking about came into being in 1998. Do you know what the idea behind that law was initially, to protect the fetus from harm, is what I'm assuming?
Certainly that has been one of the explanations. There was a case in Wisconsin in which a woman was receiving prenatal care, and that's what we all want. We want women to be connected to health care, wherever they can enter that system, because that will give them the opportunity to be healthy and to have the healthiest possible pregnancies. Her physician believed she was using cocaine. He told her to stop, as if people who genuinely have addiction problems can just stop. And when she was not immediately obedient, able to overcome her addiction, and people who smoke cigarettes know how hard any addiction is to overcome, he reported her to child welfare, and child welfare began child welfare proceedings and took custody of her fetus and ordered it into treatment. She challenged that use of the law. She won, and the response of the state legislature in Wisconsin was not to increase access to prenatal care, to create a system of single-payer health insurance to make sure all pregnant women can afford it. It wasn't to ensure that there was all the treatment that families need. Instead, they rewrote the Children's Code and added the term unborn child over 400 times and gave the court authority over pregnant women at all stages of pregnancy.
Right now, we're talking to Lynn Paltrow, founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women.
We want to hear what you think about this. Do you think there are cases where the state should intervene and maybe even detain pregnant women to ensure the health of the fetus? Where do you draw the line, if so, or do you think it's a bad idea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking now with Lynn Paltrow, founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women, talking about a recent case in Wisconsin where a woman was detained. She was sent to jail after admitting at a prenatal visit that she had formerly been addicted to painkillers. And we're talking about the case that's ensuing now will be heard in federal court in Milwaukee.
You can join in at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email, talk@WPR.org, with your thoughts on this.
Now, Lynn, before we go too much farther, you are handling this case, and I would like to know where you see it going, and what do you see as being at stake here?
Well, we are co-counsel on the case. Lead counsel is Wisconsin attorney Linda Vandenhoevel, and we're doing it with the Reproductive Justice Clinic at New York University School of Law. But this case is very important. I mean, what happened to Alicia Beltran is what we're seeing increasingly around the country, where claims that fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses have separate rights, completely separate legal rights, not moral value, but separate legal rights, is being used to intervene, to arrest, detain, and force medical treatments on pregnant women that ultimately are not only a violation of their human rights, but it's bad for babies. Every leading medical group in this country, from the American Medical Association to the American Academy of Pediatrics, says don't respond to pregnancy and pregnant women as if they're criminals, as if they're bad. This is a health situation, and as a just and sane society, we respond by providing health care. The state's role shouldn't be to empower people to say, do what I say, even if it's medically wrong, or I'll arrest you. The state's role should be to do things like fully implement the Affordable Care Act and make sure people have access to treatment. So this is an opportunity to bring attention to a particular law that we believe is used much more frequently than people know. But it also represents something that's happening across the country, and it isn't just around pregnant women who may use an illegal drug. A few months ago in Florida, a woman who went for a prenatal care visit near the end of her pregnancy, she had had several previous cesarean surgeries, went home. She was planning to come back. It was a Tuesday, to come back on Friday for cesarean surgery to deliver her fifth wanted child. And she had an email from her doctor saying, if you don't come in tomorrow, our staff feels like you need to come in tomorrow, and if you don't, I'm going to be forced to send police to your house to come get you. So we have this terrible distortion of healthcare in this country in which the anti-abortion claims that fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses should be treated separately are being used to punish and promote punitive policies towards pregnant women. These are not issues of women's rights versus fetuses' rights. These are issues of the health and well-being of pregnant women and their future children versus improper use of state power.
Let's go to the phones now. I want to take a call. We have Joe on the line from Madison. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I would just like to comment that that actually happened to me. I had gotten pregnant and went in for my prenatal care and had mentioned to the doctor that I had previously smoked marijuana before I got pregnant and that I had quit. And she nodded it off like it was nothing, you know, just went on with it. And then the day I had my baby, they sent in a social worker to come take custody of him. And I had no pre-knowledge that it was a problem or anything, and I was really appalled. They took his first poopy diaper to test it for THC, and if it would have came back positive, they would have took him right then and there from me and, like wouldn't even let me see him once the social worker came in there, like he needs to go into the nursery. So I was just freaking out, and when it came back negative, of course, then they were like, oh, sorry about that. And I even asked the social worker if I had been drinking a gallon of vodka every day, if she would have been there.
Hmm.
And she said, no, that's legal. We're just concerned because this is an illegal drug.
Okay.
And I was just really upset and wanted to just leave. I didn't feel comfortable there. I didn't want any nurses helping me once I had my baby. I didn't want to let him out of my arms, and I demanded to be released from the hospital. And then they finally went through a bunch of hoops, let me out of the or were going to let me out of the hospital, but they wouldn't let me take my baby. And I was like, well, I'm not leaving without my baby, so then I had to wait for the 24-hour period for him to get out. But, like, then after, I didn't even want to go back to the doctors because I didn't trust them. That was just so horrible for me. And, like, I didn't go back to the doctor for 5 years when I got pregnant with my next baby, and I was probably about 6 months along before I even went into the doctors because I was scared to go. I didn't know where to go to.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. And that's something that has been raised about whether this law might actually deter women from getting the care that they need. What would you say to that, Lynn?
Oh, well, that's exactly right. And I'm so sorry for that woman's experience. I think increasingly women, we get all kinds of emails at National Advocates for Pregnant Women from women who are saying they're being threatened. They're terrified that based on the fact that they may have used a drug or that they're using prescription drugs that might test as if they're criminalized drugs, that they will, instead of having a beautiful birth experience and feel safe and supported, that they are going to be faced with a threatening social worker, somebody accusing them of hurting their babies, and are frightened. I think it's very important to say that there are lots of things that can make pregnancies healthier or unhealthier. I myself am a nicotine baby. The evidence of statistical potential harm from smoking cigarettes is significant. But that doesn't mean in any particular case a pregnant woman who can't quit smoking is actually harming her baby or wants to harm her baby. And the truth is that carefully constructed, unbiased scientific research has not found that prenatal exposure to marijuana or any of the illegal drugs causes unique or even inevitable harm. So this focus on them and this using it as an excuse essentially to terrorize pregnant women and undermine families is not something that's actually advancing family values or protecting children. It's endangering them.
All right. Well, I want to thank Joe so much for calling. And let's go next to Mark in Oconomowoc. Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon. I'm going to give you an opinion that I don't think we're doing enough. If we're going to incarcerate, basically, or make wards of the state pregnant women for illegal drugs, perhaps we have research that shows that eating non-organic food that has pesticides and herbicides could also affect our unborn child. So we better lock them up as well. And maybe you're overweight, and that's a theory of gestational diabetes, or maybe you don't work out and exercise enough to have a healthy baby, or you don't strap on the headphones and listen to Mozart and enrich your child's life. Eventually, what we can do is we can have all pregnant women put into a housing by the state, which would lead us to the next slippery slope to say if you're born female with all the eggs that you'll ever deliver in your life, that's all potential life, too.
Okay, thanks, Mark, for the call. And, you know, Mark talking about a slippery slope there. Are you concerned about that same slippery slope? Lynn?
Well, I think that's kind of ironic to ask that question because we're already at the bottom of that slope. When you have a woman who seeks extremely early prenatal care because she's so conscientious and she cares so much about her pregnancy, and she shares, you know, helpful information with her doctors, and she obviously loves the idea of becoming a mother and having a healthy baby, and she is taken into custody by 5 police officers, put into handcuffs, and even shackles around her ankles, and has to stand up in front of court alone and be taken into custody and arrested. That is the bottom of the slippery slope, and it's time for people to stand up and say, this is not we have to stop the claims that are being made within the abortion debate, within the so-called personhood measure movement, and understand that the question isn't about when we should lock up pregnant women or deprive them of their rights, but how we're going to value and ensure that every pregnant woman has access to all of the reproductive health care and maternity care she needs.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Lynn Paltrow, founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women.
Now it's time for the news. Then we'll speak with the president of the Wisconsin Library Association about the role libraries play today. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.